History Makers with Matt Prater.
Coming off of drugs, you're going to have emotional problems, but I kept chasing after God.
And he's using this vehicle to bring people out of the dark into the light.
And I went forward and I knelt at the front, and it was a radical conversion experience.
And that's where the big change happened, and that's where we decided we're going to use our music for God, we're going to change our songs.
When I was about 25-year-old, I was busted and into jail, and it was there that I came to the Lord.
History Makers with Matt Prater.
Hi, and welcome to History Makers. I'm Matt Prater. Today we're speaking with David Twigg. He's the young adults pastor at Bridgman Baptist Church in Brizzy. He's also part of the Red Frogs team in Australia. How you doing, David? Welcome along. Tell us a bit of your story. Where were you born and raised?
Yeah, mate. Thanks so much for having me. So born and raised in Brizzy. Always been here, love mm-hmm. Brizzy. And
what suburb are you from?
Fernie Hills.
Fernie Hills, north side boy, okay.
Yeah, north side. Uh-huh. My parents built a house that they're still living in, mm-hmm. and I was, I think, about 6 months old when we moved into that house, and mm-hmm. it's still there, so yeah.
Tell us a bit about your upbringing. Did you have any religious background at all?
Yeah, it's an interesting one because never stepped foot into a church until I was about 18, I'd say. Never seen a Bible or anything like that. Never read a Bible or held a Bible, so no religious upbringing or anything like that. But in saying that, an amazing family, very, very blessed. My parents are amazing. I've got an older brother and older sister. So really blessed, but no faith.
Wow.
No faith background at all, yeah.
Okay, so tell us what happened. How'd you become a Christian?
Yeah, so it was. It starts probably early on, but growing up, I had a real fear, actually, of death, which sounds maybe a little bit morbid, but that was just the reality. I just remember used to thinking, it's like I'm going to go to sleep one night but never wake up, like never come out of it, and it'll just be literally blackness forever. And so as early as I can remember, even 5 years old, maybe even 4 years old, I'd lay in bed at night and think, but what's going to happen? You know, like it was actually really terrifying. And it actually stayed with me all through my primary school years and high school years. And I used to lay in bed and think about it, that, man, there's just like going to be nothing forever. And I used to think, even if I've spent 1 million years in that place, I won't even be one step closer from getting out. So it was a very hopeless feeling. And I remember actually as a little kid saying to my mum, you know, she'd tuck me in at bed at night and say, Mum, what's going to happen when we die, you know? And you know, bless my mum, like she would just say, she would just try the best and say, well, you know, like it's not for a long time now. But that really wasn't that helpful because I knew it was coming to all of us. Like that's just the reality. And so that stuck with me through my primary school years, high school years, and also this concept of purpose. I always thought, what's the purpose to life? Surely there's got to be more than just like primary school, high school, you know, maybe university, trade, work, retire, that's it. Like there's got to be more. So they were the two things that really was always in the back of my mind. And I remember about grade 11, a friend of mine was over and I didn't realize, but he actually grew up in a Christian home. I had no idea what a Christian was. Like if someone said I was a Christian, I'd be like, what on earth does that mean, you know? And so he was over and we got talking about life and death and just we were in my parents' kitchen. I still distinctly remember it. And we just got talking about life and stuff. And the subject of death got brought up and I said to him, mate, I am so scared. Like when we die, like what's going to happen? And he said to me, he goes, oh, I believe I'm going to go to heaven. And I really hadn't heard too much about this concept of heaven and God and all this sort of stuff. And I just said to him, oh, okay, well, I'll go there too, you know. And he said, oh, right. And he goes, oh, he asked me this great question. He said, oh, if you got to the gates of heaven and God says, why should I let you in? What are you going to say to him? And I wasn't too sure. Like I didn't really know. And I just said to him, I said, oh, I feel like I've been a fairly good person. Surely if he's a good God, like he'll just let me in, you know. And we kept talking a little bit about it. And so we got talking about God and stuff. And I thought, oh, I don't know if I really believe this. But then after that, he started to talk about like Jesus. And I remember thinking, oh, no, like he's got to be on drugs. Like surely he's got to be on drugs. Because I knew that. Like everyone knows that that's fairy tale stuff, right? Like no one actually believes in Jesus, surely. Like it's just like Santa Claus and Easter Bunny and things like that. But I was actually a bit challenged because he spoke with a conviction. Like he spoke as if he actually believed it was real. And as far as I was concerned, I knew it wasn't. But there was a part of me that thought, wow. You know, deep down, because I was so hopeless – there was actually a part of me that thought it would be incredible if it was true, though. Like, it would be amazing. And so we kept talking a little bit about it. I said, mate, how can you possibly believe in a God that you can't see, hear, or touch? Like, it seems absurd. Like, it's crazy. And he goes, no, that's a really good question. He said, I believe if you're genuine about it and you want to know if God's real, he will reveal himself to you. And I was like, oh, okay, like, not really believing all this sort of stuff. But I said, okay, so what does this look like? How's this going to happen? And we went through almost some prayers of the way that God might reveal himself to me. And he goes, all right. Eventually he goes, all right, what happens if someone you know or someone you don't know comes to you one day and offers you a Bible, like out of the blue? That would be a way of God revealing himself to you. And I said, oh, okay, so I'm about grade 11, whatever I am, 15 or 16 at the time, and no one had ever offered me a Bible. I'd never held a Bible, never seen one, wouldn't have a clue what was in there. And I was like, okay, yeah, fair call. And I said, oh, but hang on. Eventually, I might live till I'm 90. Eventually, someone might offer me a Bible. And that's not God. That's just a coincidence, you know? And he goes, oh, okay, fair call, fair call. Let's just make it 2 weeks then. Within 2 weeks, someone's going to offer you a Bible. So I knew, obviously, this wasn't going to happen. I was about 16, never been offered a Bible. It's not going to happen in 2 weeks. But we went to the same primary school together, same high school together, and we walked into class one day in primary school, and I did nothing at high school, like nothing. My idol was Eminem, and I used to sit in class just writing raps and stuff, and I listened to my Discman. Remember back in the days,
Discmans? Oh, yeah. Yeah. I remember those, yeah.
And I did nothing. But as we're walking to class together, my mate said to me, oh, we should go talk to Dale for a little bit. And Dale was actually a chaplain in the local school. Now, I had no idea what a chaplain was, and I thought they were like a guidance counselor or something in the school. I had no idea. But I thought, oh, that sounds like a good idea. Let's go talk to him because we'll miss out on some class. You know, that sounds great. And so we walked up to his office, started chatting, and I'd never met him, never spoken to him before in my life. But my mate and him were talking about bands and music, and they were into that sort of stuff. And I just stood in the doorway. And eventually I said to my mate after about 15 minutes, I said, oh, we should probably go to class. And he's like, yeah, fair enough. So we started to walk down the little ramp to Dale's office. And as we started to walk down, Dale called out my name. And I turned around and he threw me a book. And I caught it and I looked down and it said Surfer's Bible. And he just said to me, oh, do you want a Bible, mate? Now, I don't even know if he was allowed to do that. But but I caught this Bible. It was the first Bible I ever got. And he just said, oh, do you want a Bible? And this is literally a week after we had that conversation in my parents' kitchen. And I was a really hard-hearted person at that time in my life. And I turned to my friend and I said, oh, you told him, like you told him to give it. And he goes, mate, he grew up in a Christian home, but he had like tears in his eyes because I think for the first time in his life, God really, because he told me later that he was praying his guts out, you know, like he'd put himself out there. And so, yeah, I received this Bible and said, you told him. He goes, mate, I promise you I never said a thing. Mm. And for the first time in my life, I literally thought, whoa, hang on a second, God could be real. Like this actually could be real. Maybe there's a God who loves me and maybe there's a God who has a plan for my life. And so I'd never stepped foot into a church, but over a period of a year, I started this journey of like, okay, God, if you're real, I want you to reveal yourself to me. And he did that in some really amazing ways until finally after grade 12, I went on this trip to Fraser Island with that same mate and his family, and there were some other families there. And I just had so many questions about God. And I said, God, I prayed my first prayer the night before we left to Fraser. And I said, God, if you're real, I'd love to sit down with someone and ask them questions. And we left for Fraser that next day. I had no idea, but they were all like Christian families. And we set up the campsite. And then I sat down with these two older guys and the subject of God just got brought up. And I thought, this is crazy. Like, it's honestly, it was really interesting. And I got to ask them all these questions and they answered all my questions. And then one of the guys who actually was a pastor at Bridgie Church, I had no idea, but he went back to his caravan. And, you know, the Bible talks about always be prepared to give an answer for the hope that rests within you. He went to his caravan. He comes out with this bit of paper and he says, look, you don't need to read it now, but I just want to give this to you. And he gave me this bit of paper, and I didn't read it, but I put it in my bag. And I spent 10 days on that holiday with these Christian people, and they weren't preaching to me or anything like that. But the best way I can describe it, it was like this light shone through them, this peace, this joy, this contentment. And I remember thinking, I don't have what they have, but I want it.
Yeah.
And after that holiday, I went home, and I remember sitting on the edge of my bed after that holiday, just by myself sitting on my bed. And I said, I was thinking, what do they have? They've got something. I knew it, and I didn't have it. And I remember that bit of paper that God had given me, and I went into my bag and I grabbed that bit of paper out, and at the top it said, a prayer to receive Christ. And I had no concept of what I was doing, but I knew I wanted what they had. And on the edge of my bed, I just prayed that prayer and I asked Christ into my heart. And Matt, to be honest, mate, I grew up in a great family. I feel like I had everything. But I always felt like there was this puzzle piece missing. It's like a 1,000-piece puzzle. You get to the end and you go, there's something missing. And I just felt like the cup was nearly full my whole life, but not quite.
Mm.
And when I said that prayer for the first time in my life, like I just encountered God. And for the first time, I experienced a joy and a peace and contentment like I'd never experienced before.
Mm.
And the cup didn't get filled up. It overflowed.
Awesome.
And it just continued to keep overflowing. And I was sold. I was yeah. all in. I just said, God, you're amazing.
So good, mate. And tell us, how did you get involved in church and everything after that?
Yeah, well, that was interesting. So still never stepped foot into a church, you know. And so that same friend, after that, like my life was transformed. And after that, he started to ring me every Sunday afternoon and he said, oh, mate, come to church. I said, nah, no way, because I was terrified. I'd never set foot in church. Like, what are they doing there, you know? And I was like, no way, I can't do that. But I'm just such a credit to him because for 3 months straight, he rang me every Sunday afternoon and said, come to church with me, come to church with me. I was like, nah, didn't want to borrow it. And he really, one afternoon, he gave me no option. He said, all right, I'm coming by your house. I'm going to pick you up. Me and my brother are going to pick you up. And we're just taking you.
Awesome.
And I was just like, oh, okay. Jumped in the car with him. But I'm so glad, I'm so thankful for him that he said that, because I went there and he sort of dragged me along and I went into church and I was terrified, absolutely terrified. Went to church and I was just like, this is incredible. I was blown away. I just thought it was the most inspirational thing I've ever been to.
Yeah.
And we left the church and I said to my mate, I said, I just need to get this clear. Do you get to come here for free every week? You know,
just that,
and I said, and he's like, he looks at me, he goes, yeah, and I said, but so there's no admission charge, you know,
and that's hilarious.
And he's like, no, it's church.
It's, he goes, free. It's church.
Yeah, it's free. And I said, that's the most incredible thing I have ever been to. Like, I'm going to keep coming back here. That's incredible. Like, you don't even need to pay. Like,
oh,
you don't even
it.
Need to pay. And so I just never stopped. And then I was all in. Like, God has saved me. So I said to God early on, I said, God, I'll give you my life. Like, you saved me. The least I can do is give you everything back, my life. That's the very least I can do.
And was that Brisbane Baptist Church?
And that was Brisbane Baptist, yeah.
So you're now the young adults pastor there.
Yeah.
And you do outreach as well. What does that look like? What do you do?
Yeah, I mean, early on I just said to God, I said, God, I want to tell people about you for the rest of my life.
Mm.
That's what I want to do. Because he was so incredible to me. I just said, I will always tell people about you for the rest of my life. And I did that, and I actually started my carpentry apprenticeship. I got involved in carpentry and building, and I love that. That's my trade. I went and did my builder's license. But what happened was I started getting involved in young adults ministry, and I just knew, I was like, this is the generation for me. I just loved working with young adults. And so I was still building, but I was all in and serving wholeheartedly in God's house. I just thought, God, I want to give back. And I never thought I'd be a pastor. No way. I love building, but I always was going to tell people about God, but I didn't want to necessarily be a pastor, you know? I love doing building, but I was just engulfed. I just said, God, I want to serve you. And I got to the point where our young adults pastor at the time started moving more into sort of an executive assistant role in the church. And he was just giving me more responsibility in young adults. And I really got to a point where I was sort of running young adults, but without necessarily the title. And then eventually the church had been praying. They called me in and I had an opportunity to preach. Mate, I failed everything at high school because I couldn't do an oral presentation in front of my friends. And then God's called me to preach the gospel, you know, which
That's
is
so
insane.
Good. Yeah.
But I had an opportunity to preach and 15 people came to faith that night.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the church were like, hang on. There's sort of like, I think they're God's hands on this young fella's life. They called me and said, oh, I want you to start running young adults. Like, come on as an intern pastor. And I just said, oh, no way. Like, no way. I don't want to be a pastor. Like, I got my builder's license. I want to develop land. I want to do property development. I had all these visions and dreams. But I said this very famous word. We often say, oh, I'll pray about it, though. And I did. For the next 2 weeks, I prayed about it. And God just said, do you want to develop land or do you want to develop my kingdom, you know? And I just said, oh, okay, Lord, all right, let's do this. So I started doing young adults, and then my passion for outreach just flowed through young adults, and we just wanted to reach young people, you know, reach souls. It's the most important thing we can give our lives to, you know, just fulfill the Great Commission.
And it's a great church. I've been a number of times. I've got a lot of friends that go there, And I've loved seeing the growth of that church. It's probably one of the largest Baptist churches in Australia. Yeah. Is it at like a few thousand, 3,000 or 4,000, something like that? Yeah, How many services on a Sunday? Like 4 services?
Yeah, 4 services Sunday. Yeah.
And their Christmas stuff is amazing. I take my kids every year to the big Christmas.
Yeah,
it's so good. Now you're also involved with Red Frogs.
Yeah.
And my daughter works for Red Frogs, and I met you on a tour. At schoolies, you were taking me and some other pastors and business people around, and I got to go on the stage and DJ at Red Frogs on the beach. For those who don't know what Red Frogs is, you've done it for like 13 years or so. Yeah. What's it look like these days?
Yeah, it's amazing. I first started 13 years ago at schoolies, and just the opportunity to impact young people's lives, I thought this is incredible, just to go down and serve them. And it was amazing. And I was skeptical. I thought, who would call something Red Frogs? What sort of name's that? That's the lamest name I've ever heard. But I went down, I was like, this is incredible, absolutely incredible. So, and then I never stopped going. So that was 13 years ago. And but then it grew for me beyond schoolies, and I started doing universities. I've done festivals. I've done some of the biggest sporting events. Cricket Australia, Red Frogs is one of the partners there. I do a lot of presentations in schools. I've done a lot talking about identity in schools. Schoolies presentations is a big one for us. Party Safe is another presentation we do in schools. So I do a lot of presentations in schools through Red Frogs. Absolutely love it. Yeah, it's incredible.
And, you know, a lot of people know Red Frogs because they help out at schoolies and you know, festivals and things. But really, when it comes down to it, they've literally saved young people's lives.
Yes.
You've been in that circumstance before. Tell us what happened.
Yeah. It was probably about 4 years ago now. We got a call through. This is down at schoolies. Got a call through the Red Frog hotline number, and there was a friend that was concerned about another friend. And so I grabbed a couple of boys. I said, let's go check it out. And it was, this would have been about 2 or 3 a.m. in the morning. And we go to the particular hotel, 36 stories up. It was quite high up, and we weren't sure exactly which room. So we knocked on this door. The friend said, when you come out of the lift, turn left, and it's the door on your right. So we followed the instructions, knocked on a door, and no answer. Then eventually a schoolie kind of peered out and said, what's the go? We'd woken him up, you know. And so we woke him up, and we said, look, we had a phone call that a friend was concerned about another friend, and he goes, it's not here. We said, so sorry. He closed the door. And we just thought, we can't keep knocking on these doors, you know. But then as we're standing there thinking about what we're going to do, the schoolie reappears and he goes, guys, you better come in. We walk into the room, one of the scariest scenes I've ever seen. We walk into the room, it was pitch black because everyone's asleep, but there was one of their friends that was on the balcony all by himself just drinking. He had a bottle of, we later saw just a full bottle of whiskey that had been finished. He'd been sitting on the balcony. We walk into the room, it's pitch black, and there's like a glass screen doors that go out into the balcony. And as we walk in, I see this kid just laying across the balcony railing.
Wow.
And he looks at us and he's about to go over.
Oh, my
goodness. And he's laying on this very thin balcony railing. Half his body's on the outside, half his body inside. And he's laying and he turns his head and he sees us walk into the room. And the boys that are with me say, well, you know, what do we do, you know? And I said, let's move swiftly but calmly. Let's go. Like, let's go. So we start walking towards the glass doors. And I remember thinking at that moment, God, I don't know how I would cope, 36 stories up. I'm not sure how I'd cope if this guy falls near, you know. We walk up to the window, the glass doors, and we open it. And I just think the whole time he's staring at us, almost contemplating, do I go or not? What are these guys going to do? We walk over to him. We step onto the balcony. He's still laying across the railing. We step onto the balcony and we start walking. We're about, a meter or 2 meters away from him. And as we nearly get to him, he falls on the inside of the balcony and falls on the balcony.
Oh, my goodness.
We race to him. We grab him. We say, hey, we're Red Frogs. We're here to help you. And he says, leave me alone. My life's stuffed. Leave me alone. My life's stuffed. He just keeps repeating that. We said, your life's not stuffed. We're here to help you. We want to get you inside straight away. We want to get you inside. And he goes, nah, just leave me. So we stayed with him. My mate straight on the phone to 000 to the ambulance. And so myself and another friend were just like, we want to get you inside. He's like, hey, just give me a moment, just give me some space. I want to get in. He's like, okay. So he calmed down. We just gave him a little bit of space and he goes, all right, I want to go inside. We're like, great, let's do that. he stands up, and as we turn to go inside, he turns and he runs and grabs the railing to jump over. But this time we're close enough. We grab him.
Oh, my goodness.
We grab him, pull him back down, and he sort of collapses back down onto the balcony ground again. And we say, mate, we are taking you inside.
Yeah.
We've got to get you inside. We take him inside. We're just holding him, take him inside, lock the doors, get him inside. He was really sick, very just drunk.
Yeah.
Finished a whole bottle of whiskey or whatever. Mm. And then he goes, look, I feel sick. We take him into the toilet, starts throwing up and all that sort of stuff. Police arrive, ambulance arrive. But, yeah, mate, a moment I'll never forget the rest of my life. Just literally saving lives,
And that's the thing, Red Frogs are there keeping an eye out on kids, not only at schoolies but at universities, festivals, and they're all around the world now too. And all because of this one crazy mate of ours, Andy Goulet, had some skateboard buddies at schoolies one year. It's amazing the story.
Anyway, it's amazing.
So good to hear, mate. Well, it's been inspirational hearing your story today. Our time's almost up, but I just wanted to say, well done on sharing your story today. It's inspirational. If people want to find out more about Red Frogs, they can search it up online. Or if they want to find out about Bridgie Baptist, what's the website for Bridgie if people want to find out more?
Yeah, just go to www.bridgemanbaptistchurch. Yeah, they'll find it.
Find it online.
Yeah.
And I know you guys do live streaming and you've got young adults and all, it's a great ministry. It's been awesome catching up with you, David Twigg. I reckon you're a history maker. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, mate.
If you'd like to hear this conversation again, listen online anytime at historymakersradio.com. There you'll also find links to all of our social media channels and you can subscribe to our iTunes podcast. History Makers is a faith-based ministry, and we want to thank everyone for their generous support. If you've got a suggestion of anyone we should interview, send us an email, info@historymakersradio.com. God bless. I'm Matt Prater, and my challenge to you now is to go and make history.